our lesson this morning. He is he's visiting us from Pullman. Tried to make it a different town in Washington, from Pullman, Washington. But he grew up in Houston. He's here with his mother, Marvis, this morning. Marcus did not start out his career in ministry. He started out as a lawyer. He was a public defender, worked in private practice, and was an assistant U.S. attorney in Minneapolis. And then he decided to get into ministry in a full-time capacity. Had been working with his church there and decided to get into a more full-time capacity of ministry. So he's been a youth minister. He was a missionary in Malawi for several years, 3 years, thank you. And he's a minister now full-time in Pullman. But we're glad to have him with us this morning to offer a message from the Word. Marcus.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back. As we turn to Psalm 92, by way of introduction or reintroduction, where I'm working right now, we go through the Psalms. So we're really going through the entire Bible, Genesis through Revelation. We've made it up to the Psalms now, so we're doing a chapter a day. So right now we're doing chapters 92 through 98, and this week, chapter 98, not just because we're in the holiday season that kicked in a little bit later, but because it's talking about time periods, and the amount of time we have to work during different seasons of life. It's really kind of what got me into thinking about different seasons. There are three time periods that stood out to me in this passage. First of all, it's going to be daily. It's going to talk about some things that we need to think about day and then night. Then it's going to liken to other seasons in terms of that concept of flourishing. It's going to talk about flourishing in comparison to grass, and then flourishing in comparison to more stable or more permanent things like cedars that are over and over drawn on as metaphors in the Bible to talk about more lasting or enduring periods of life. If you'll join me in reading, chapter 92, verse 1. Chapter 92, verse 1. It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to your name, O Most High, to declare your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night, to the music of the lute, the harp, and the melody of the lyre. For you, O Lord, have made me glad by your works. At the works of your hands I sing for joy. In verse 2, where it says, your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night. From time to time, I use the illustration of I didn't always understand that concept of steadfast love. So I might have already mentioned it, that I heard someone mention it. Well, maybe think of the relationship between Ruth and Naomi, the way in which Ruth, in spite of the fact that she was a Moabitess moving to a foreign land, having lost her husband, her priority was more or less making sure that Naomi was safe and cared for, apart from what might have not necessarily been in her own best interest, after actually having been encouraged to go back to Moab so she could start over again. But steadfast love is that concept of, no matter what is best for me, I'm going to stick by you in your time of need. But the thing that I began to realize as we went further through the Psalms was, in the last couple of weeks, it's starting to link this concept of steadfast love to the concept of faithfulness, which helped me remember that my steadfast love might not mean as much if my presence doesn't add value. And that's what faithfulness is. Faithfulness is that concept of, in your translation, it might actually just be simply translated as truth or trustworthiness. And so in that situation, where if you simply look at it at face value from the marriage perspective, if I'm coming home every day, I'm a single guy, so this is definitely an illustration, but I'm unfaithful to my wife, my presence doesn't mean the same thing. If I'm coming home every day, or even if I'm faithful to my wife, but my presence is one where no matter what she has done during the day, it's not an encouragement when I'm coming home, then that concept of faithfulness begins to be diminished, or helps us understand why it's not just enough to be present, but it matters whether or not I'm adding value during my time there. And so now put that in the perspective of God, where we're talking about his steadfast love and faithfulness in that time period again. He's saying, focus on his steadfast love in the morning, the fact that he's not going to leave you. Let that be what guides you when you get up in the morning. But as you are going to bed at night, recall that his presence is there to add value. You don't have to worry about trying to sort out with him or fight over him, a tug of war over what is true. And sometimes we can, but that's what the rest of these passages are going to. Sometimes in my mind, we talked about in class, we come into a world where our experience shapes our perspective. And it can be difficult to take a human perspective and understand godly things. And so we all, to a certain degree, struggle to take our experience and have it connect with the things that God is trying to get our eyes open to see. And one of the reasons why we come together as a group of believers or a church is the thing that bonds us is not that we necessarily see it more clearly than anybody else in the building, but the thing that probably ties us together is we're all struggling to understand. And God willing, the support that we have is, okay, I don't necessarily see it as clearly as I need to. But God willing, I've shown some growth over the time I've been struggling with that. And I'm coming together with people who, more than anything, are committed to trying to have a clearer understanding of what one of our brothers mentioned in class, purpose. We talked a little bit about working. And what if you had to look back over your time working, if you're retired, you thought about the best things of your work life. And then we talked about maybe if you looked over your time working and talked about maybe some things that you regret. What kinds of things fed into those positives that you look back over your time in your work life? And one of our brothers mentioned purpose. And so one of the things that helps draw us together here isn't so much that we've got it figured out because we got this. It's that we are opening up our hearts to what this is trying to clarify for us, because until we die, I don't think any of us is going to have it all figured out. But to the degree we are all genuinely trying to have a better understanding of what he's trying to get us to see, that's where our common bond, as our brother mentioned in the prayer, that's where our common bond brings us together in an encouraging way so that we can say, I don't see it, but I believe that you add value to my experience in trying to get a better understanding of what he is trying to get me to see. And more importantly, practically, how does that help me live? How does that help me live? As we go on, verses 5 through 11 are going to talk about, I'm sorry, really 5 through 9 are going to talk about one challenge to understanding how it is that we should live. Verse 5, how great are your works, O Lord? Your thoughts are very deep. The stupid man cannot know, the fool cannot understand this, that though the wicked sprout like grass, that's one season for lack of a better term, and all evildoers flourish, they are doomed to destruction forever. But you, O Lord, are on high forever. For behold, your enemies shall perish. All evildoers shall be scattered. It's a morbid passage. It's one of the ones that in trying to put together a lesson, you just want to skip over it. Why? Because we are in seasons, right? And we're in the happy season. Just came out of eating season. I call that Thanksgiving, right? Thanksgiving. We're going into giving season, right? Preach happy stuff. Leave that part out. Trust me, I was going to. But I was like, I don't think that helps, right? Because the psalmist put it in there for a reason. And understand at the very beginning, what's the occasion for this psalm? If you have a title heading, it might be a psalm for the Sabbath. That's a day of rest. Why are you talking about the wicked and evildoers in your happy times? Well, because they're still a part of the reality. As another one of our brothers mentioned, I tend to recognize and appreciate the happy times a little bit more when I realize the way in which his steadfast love and his faithfulness have delivered me through the reality of this world. And the reality is, it's not always rosy. And so sometimes my Sabbath song is a little bit happier when I give thought to the way in which he's helped me overcome some of those parts that don't feel quite as much like they are worth living, right? And so here, one of the things that can help me, one of the things that can help me to appreciate better those Sabbath moments. I appreciate feedback. Sometimes getting healthy feedback. Now I got to take a tangent. I'm going back and reviewing video this week. And that whole slow down thing matters, right? Because I'm going back. I was like, did I say that? Yeah. And so I'm editing. And so the video is kind of the truth. It's the mirror that sometimes I still need to slow down, right? I talk at normal speed. This feels like normal speed. I'm sorry. But sometimes I need to slow down. And sometimes in life we fall into rhythms that aren't healthy. And so sometimes it helps to have someone who reminds us that there is a comfortable rhythm for speaking and there's a comfortable rhythm for hearing. So thank you. Because ultimately, one of those things that also helps us look back on our time more favorably is one of those times when people let us get 10 minutes into the sermon talking too fast, but not through the whole thing again. And so the experience can be better when you have people who function as a mirror. Mom's with me. Sometimes mom's face is a mirror. She's a little sick this morning, so she's got her mask on. Sometimes her face is a clock, even when I can't see the clock. Marcus, wrap it up. Sometimes you just have people who are kind enough to give you direct feedback, right? And so in that, it's much like we're seeing in this set of verses, verses 5-9. One of the things that can, on the other hand, have me feel like it's just not worth fighting is when we take ourselves out of the context of being together as believers. When we go out into that workplace or that place in society where things are trending in a direction that just makes us internally feel like, wait a minute, I'm not sure whether or not this is the direction I need to be heading in, but that's what everybody else is doing. So it's one of the reasons why having an alternative to just what everybody else is doing is so healthy. Because you need people who are at least trying to do the right thing. Why? Because you have, like they called it, the narrow road and the broad. You can take your pick of groups and collectives and people that will carry you off into any direction whatsoever, healthy or not. You need to be in a place where that whole concept of faithfulness, you are around people who are at least trying to do healthy things in healthy ways so that they can keep you rooted and the fact that it is still worth trying, no matter how much drama you have to face in other cliques or collectives that are trying to conform you into unhealthy goals or unhealthy ways of reaching healthy goals. So that's why when the brother preaches about there are things that drive us apart, but there are things that keep us together. We need to be in a place where people are at least valuing and prioritizing a healthy direction, and more importantly, a healthy way of getting there. Joe Frazier line I steal from every now and again, ex-prize fighter that fought Muhammad Ali. He said, early on in life, my father taught me there's no right way to do the wrong thing, and there's no wrong way to do the right thing. It's that whole concept of goals and methods. No matter how pure the goal, shady ways of getting there still land us in a place where God, over the next few chapters, that concept of judgment is going to come up over and over again in these 7 chapters. And so God has come to, God willing, one day bring us relief from the difficulties of functioning in what can sometimes feel like and really be an abusive world. Because he is fair, he does not cut us out of space for our personal indulgence or to the degree we have given in to some basically partnering up with some of those unhealthy ways. See, how does it happen? We talked about this whole concept of trauma bonding. I am not going to venture into counseling, but we did look up the term. And we said one of the things that stood out or jumped out of the page when I looked up the Cleveland Clinic's definition of trauma bonding was this whole concept of wanting in a relationship that is honestly abusive, right? To have a timeout. And want that break so badly that I just recall the moments of peace in that relationship. And see, over time, what can happen is I can be tempted to define that relationship by those moments of peace at the expense of the truth of what the relationship was actually like. And I can want to cling to those moments of peace so much that I define someone who's still intent on abusing me by the good moments. It's what we call the carrot and the stick. I can live my life in a cycle where I'm chasing that few moments of peace so much that I stay in a situation where I'm completely free actually to move on from. Or if we're in a situation, we don't always, as our brother reminded us in class, we don't always have the freedom to just pick up and move away. But we do have the ability to create boundaries. And so what's happening is in situations where we need to just reevaluate, is this situation healthy? Are these few minutes of peace really worth what I'm enduring? It's not always a stay or leave scenario. Sometimes it's just God's call to say, in this situation, Marcus, you just need to let me help you set up healthy boundaries so you can do this thing in a more healthy way. Because I think I heard Paul somewhere say, run with endurance the race that is set before you. Didn't always give you the opportunity to pick up and leave the situation. But it does say, I don't have to keep trying to do it this way. And so when we're looking at this situation, why did the whole concept of trauma bonding come up? Well, it's a relational concept that as a preacher, oh, wait a minute. That's literally the situation we are in this world. See, there are some parts of the world that seem super cool. I have a great time sometimes, right? We don't call it sin because it's not fun. See, sometimes as Christians, we're tempted to pretend it's not fun. No, I didn't hate that when I did it. It was fun. I just don't like the consequences, right? And so there are some parts of this world that we actually have become able to enjoy over time, even though the relationship that we have, if we look at it over time, it's not here to help us. It's a relatively fallen, I think we've heard the term, it's a fallen situation. And so sometimes we can be tempted to look at the world through the lens of the moments of pleasure that we have, to the neglect of realizing over the course of our life, what's it really doing to me? Is it really making me a better person? Or am I simply clinging to those moments of joy I have in this world so much that I am allowing it to give me peace on its terms? And that's where the trauma bonding with the world becomes a problem, where I begin to lose track of what is right and what is wrong, just so I can have a moment of peace. See, because at that point, that's what Paul begins to warn us about in Romans 12. We talked about in class a little bit. Do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And over time, I talk quite a bit about suffering. The one thing we have, whether you are a Christian, an atheist, or an agnostic, wherever you fall on the spectrum of beliefs, one of the things we all have in common is we're all going to suffer. And the question is, how are we going to go about it? And what happens is the world gives us the option to get off of the suffering or a stop sooner than sometimes it seems like Jesus is giving us an option to get off. But part of the problem with getting off a stop too early is you can see it in your bus line. Houston's a big city. If you don't get to where you're going and you get off your stop too early, you're going to have a pretty unpleasant walk, especially in June, right? And that's the enemy's invitation. He's not concerned about your destination. He just wants to hammer you so much that you just want to get off the ride in a place where God's saying you just need to keep going, right? That can be a cheesy preacher metaphor, but the reality is there are some benefits to staying on the ride for the duration that God has talked about. And that goes on in verses 10 and 11. Verses 10 and 11. But you have exalted my horn like that of the wild ox. You have poured over me fresh oil. My eyes have seen the downfall of my enemies. My ears have heard the doom of evil assailants. It's so important not to get lost in the cycle of life that there is an actual season of accountability. See, the thing that gets lost often in me just living my life is accountability and justice. When he's talking about that over the next few chapters, I'm like, okay, fine, but that happened to that one. But what about the 100 other people who are still getting away with whatever? See, that pressures me to go ahead and get off of the train that says integrity, that says truth, that says all of the different things God is calling us to be, because I see inklings of justice, but I see a trend, an overall trend of behavior that's not going to help me out one bit in what I'm trying to accomplish and get done in my life. And understand this metaphor of seasons. It's not just the fact that there are seasons of benefit, of relief, and also of justice. It's not all the fruit ripens at the same time. How do we know? Turn to the next psalm, or two psalms over, Psalm 94, verse 12. Blessed is the man whom you discipline, O Lord, and whom you teach out of your law, to give him rest from days of trouble until a pit is dug for the wicked. Understand, one of the most difficult things about staying in touch with the things that God is calling us to do, especially when it comes to our integrity, is sometimes we are actually going through it in seasons where those who seem like they're doing wrong are actually prospering. That's the kind of pressure that can make it seem like it's not worth it. But Psalms like this help you to understand that just like, use the bus metaphor, just like there are seasons for picking certain types of fruit or certain types of crops, even within the crops that are in season, Had a chance to work in farm country, and I learned about cycling crops, right? So that means at some point, there are certain crops you pick in some season, and to make an efficient use of your field, you plant others in the season or the off season when weather permits. But even within those crops that are all picked at the same season, not everything necessarily ripens at the same time. And so when he's saying, God bless the one who endures discipline, so in the day of harvest, like it talks about at the end of the Revelation, there are two harvests that are coming before the book of imagery ends. And it talks about the harvest of the righteous. There sometimes we'll see, like you say, only the good die young. Well, it's not only. But we'll see people cut down early in life who seem like they were doing things the right way. And sometimes it'll cause us to scratch our heads. Jesus explained it this way. Do you recall the Tower of Siloam that fell on, right? Are they any more wicked than those who are still around us? But he says one thing that caught my attention in connection with this passage. Unless you repent, you will likewise perish? No. He says you will all likewise perish. And that connects back to what we have here in Psalm 92. If you look in Psalm 92, it'll say in verse 9, a place where I slowed down. For behold your enemies, O Lord, for behold your enemies shall perish. All evil doers shall be scattered. And so sometimes when we go out into a world that tries to define seasons for us, it will say, oh no, consequences are random. Who knows what's going to happen to one or another? You can't really figure it out. I don't think that's true. I think it happens in a way that's beyond our understanding. But one of my favorite dead horse beat over and over into the ground passages is James 1. If any of you lacks wisdom, ask God, who gives generously. See, sometimes my lack of understanding of justice is one of those things that should drive me closer to God on a constant basis. And so even if I'm going out into a world on a daily basis and I still can't figure out why it's worth still trying to hold on to my integrity, that should still drive me closer and closer to God on a daily basis. I mention it frequently. The question marks sometimes are a source of anxiety and frustration, but the word literally says, all things work out for the good of those who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. Amen. And so insofar as you have pressing, puzzling doubts that persist over long seasons, the opportunity there is to be driven closer to God to help you understand things that he says not everybody is going to get. Why? Because sometimes we rush to conclusions and we're satisfied. Oh, yeah, that person sounds smart. There are days I preach a good sermon. There are days I don't. Days you might be tempted to just listen to what I say and take it home. There are days you should always be a Berean. And so the difficulty is it's not just on Sunday, right? There's some things that sound super persuasive, so much to the point where we stop checking the facts, the substance of what's really going on. Is judgment really random? Is it really just happenstance? Or is there something else that God is willing to show me if I simply draw closer to him? When he explained the parables, or why do you talk in parables? Matthew 13. It wasn't like his disciples just got it. The story of the four soils, the wheat and the tares. They came closer to him in a time of confusion. David didn't necessarily write Psalm 119, the longest psalm in the Bible, but frequently use this metaphor. If it was written by David, think about this. The longest chapter in the Bible is written by a soldier, not a Paul, not a scholar, not a Levite, a soldier. And the theme that underlies that book is meditation on God's word. So this man who fights for a living understands the fact that he needs to meditate. Like this says, we got three different seasons here. Like the grass grows, or before the grass, day on a daily basis. Steadfast love in the morning, faithfulness in the afternoon. I need it on autopilot. Why? Because until I rest my eyes in death, the questions are going to still linger. And the questions can even be either be a source of anxiety or a thing that helps me develop my relationship with God and draw it even closer. It's like hard times in a relationship. I remember, I don't like to talk too much about being on the mission field, but a married couple I got to see on the mission field. Lone couple from the UK, United Kingdom. They talked about in their many years, I was there for 3 years, they counseled me, they were super kind. They had been there for 20 years, I think. I won't make it up, but they had been there for a long time. And when things got difficult for me on the mission field, they were the people who I was encouraged to consult. That's the literal thing they said about their marriage. It grew closer because of the isolation of the mission field. And the difficulties of life external helped drive them together as a couple. The uncertainty of what they would face in a culture they studied real hard about, but didn't completely understand enough to survive in, drew them closer together. And so likewise, we go back to that whole concept of Romans 8 and we look at this passage. When sometimes the concept of justice seems difficult to track, that's one of the things that can drive us closer to the God who literally says, unless he's lying, he's not lying, in James, he gives generously. And here's my great obstacle to that. I love to doubt. I don't just doubt. I like to do it because it's an easy plan B to me understanding. See, I don't always just run to God every time I have a question. I don't always forgive easily when I've been told something and it didn't check out. Sometimes doubt becomes my comfort zone, that happy place I go to when things don't go my way. But at the end of the day, it talks about this whole concept of, once again, family, compared to, we have, back up in Pullman, Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous meets in the building. And it's based upon a principle that in some ways overlaps with what we do. The reason why we have elders who are officially elders or elders who are unofficially elders is, God willing, much like in NA and AA, they got a few more years of sobriety under their belt. And God willing, beyond the insight into the word, they can give us an example of how to maintain sobriety. And so if you take it out of the anonymous categories and you just put it into the life categories, one of the values that we have, he literally says in the new covenant, the older women should, counsel the younger. Why? Because you've been through some things that they can benefit from in the difficulties and the trials that they're going through today. So it's not just the official leadership structure. He's talking about everybody. The value of this body is having the success of the older generations make it easier for the younger generations to negotiate the difficulties that everybody is going through. Once again, you're all going to suffer. The question is how we're going to do it. As we go through the final verses of the chapter, they're going to talk about, beyond the psalmist, he's going to talk about some general principles about the righteous. Verse 12, the righteous flourish like the palm tree and grow like a cedar in Lebanon. They are planted in the house of the Lord. They flourish in the courts of our God. They still bear fruit in old age. They are never full of sap. They are ever full of sap and green to declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. And this passage seemed to jump off the page to me when last week, before I started studying it, we were sitting having dinner with some folks from church. At this particular congregation, a woman passed by, said hello. She just greeted us and had a conversation for a minute. Simple conversation. But as she walked on, some of the elders told us, she's 90, I can't remember 90 what, and she's a Holocaust survivor, member of that church. And so as she walked by, first of all, the 90-something caused jaws to drop to the floor, at least mine, because you never would have known it. And so this passage began to really have a living example to me of what it can be like in situations where, one, you're not here if God hasn't delivered you. But more than that, just like there are seasons of accountability, understand one of the reasons why it's important to invest in righteousness now is, as we age, God's toolbox gets wider and wider for all the ways he can get our attention. Health, aches and pains, insomnia, vision, those are all things. You don't have to trust me. Read the end of Ecclesiastes when Solomon is describing what it's like to age, right? And so one of the things I saw in that woman was the way in which, at 98, never would have guessed it. But she also made me think about the ways in which there are simply some health problems that we are just going to have to endure. Got the chance to go to the funeral of a doctor not too long ago. And the thing that encouraged me was this man who was a member of the Church of Christ, how all of these people came from not only inside the church but outside of the church to talk about all the great things that he had done for them in his life. All the times they might not have necessarily afforded quality health care, that he was there. all the times that they might not have been able to call on a doctor they didn't know at that certain hour, but instead of having to try to arrange an appointment, they were able to at least get a consultation because he was there. And see, later in life, his health failed, and inevitably, he had to question, after taking care of people for this long, how is it happening to me, Lord? But understand the investments that he made over the course of his life help us understand the distinction between, we talked about it, everybody's got a cross to bear, but not everybody has the same burden. And there's some ways that this passage is helping us to understand that we all have a cross to bear, and that health may be a part of that. But one of the things I saw as people were going forward to talk about the great things he had done is during the course of a life well lived, you don't have to just worry about, is God hearing my prayers? You have a team of people who are eager to return the blessings you sowed to them in your seasons of health. In times where, yeah, my prayers might get it done, but like I said, I love to doubt. And so in a time when my prayers might not be going up as well because I'm the one that's going through it, there are other people who passionately might want to see me, even if it's not meant for me to give, bounce back from this one, might want to see this have the best possible effect it can on those who are watching me go through it, to endure the suffering, and as much as possible, helping God to look at me with an eye towards mercy in a time when his toolbox is opening up wide, to get my attention in all the ways that if I'm not really believing that I need to stay on, like we said, that train, if I'm believing that my integrity doesn't matter because it's not getting me anywhere, one of the things that helps me out later in life is to understand that no matter what my perspective is on my condition, the health concerns that I am going through, is it helps me to open my eyes to all the things that God has left me. So you may not be in the condition of that woman who survived the camps, who now you couldn't tell she was 98. But one of the things that makes my suffering worse is when all I see is the obstacle that's before me, that new ache, that new bad news from the doctor. See, one of the things that helps me open my perspective is being able to appreciate all of the different things, not only that God has given me in this stage of life as things have begun to decline. Is it helps me realize that, wait a minute, I'm also connected to people who I've seen their prayers answered. And that's one of the things that over time we've grown into as a habit where I'm working. Instead of simply just offering up the prayer request, we've taken stock. Like, we have sisters who do accounting. We've taken stock of all the answered prayers. Why? Because the enemy wants me to focus so much on the problem that I forget, oh, wait a minute. This is a situation that we clearly thought it was hopeless enough that we prayed in the first place. We took it to God, and it actually got better. And so one of the things that staying in touch with others is I don't have to think it up on my own. I don't have to try to be super encouraging without the benefit of other people where I can see, oh, no, he did answer sister such and such's prayer. He did answer brother such and such's prayer. And so that's the collective that I have to draw on. When I'm involved in the life of others, like you all are going to be with the Impact Church this week, don't overlook the significance of that, maybe. See, because the time that you spend working with the people from Impact, that expands your network. And so when you call and you're in need of help, you're not a stranger to the Impact Church of Christ. It's one thing if they pray for you from a detached perspective, or they offer help, the help that they can spare. But if you remember back to the time of the hurricane, one of the times it was easiest to get folks to go to different folks' homes. Oh, that's brother and sister such and such. You didn't have to beg for volunteers there. That's not somebody we didn't know. And so one of the things he's talking about here as we close is in verse 12, where he says, the righteousness flourished like the palm tree. That's that third time period. Palm tree is different from grass. It doesn't rise and fall with the frequency of the frailty of grass. In verse 15, where it says, there is no unrighteousness in him. It's not situations where we can be tempted to try to strike a deal. One of the things I typically do is try to, in a situation where it just doesn't seem reasonable to do the things that God is asking me to do, try to come up with a happy medium. God, maybe it's this much of what you're asking me to do, because what's written here just doesn't make any sense at all. So when he's saying there is no unrighteousness in him, he's saying in times when it looks like you want to strike up a deal or make a compromise, guess again. That's another one of those moments that needs to draw you back or drive you back to James chapter 1. In times when it looks like it's completely impossible to do this thing that I'm asking you to do, or it has consequences you just don't want to deal with, there may be a happy medium that you haven't seen that's different than the one you've carved out that looks like it's the right way to go. But then there also might be a way, as they say, there's sometimes God is not going to deliver you from the burden, but he might strengthen you from the path that seems more difficult, the one that ultimately will lead you to seasons where, when it's beyond me or the doctors to bring you good news, he's still willing to give you, even when the news is bad, a second chance at flourishing. God's best to you as you go forward in him.
Please rise.